Seeing the Earth from space is bound to change your perspective. Literally. This week, Techonomics host Jason Middleton speaks with an astronaut about how space helped change his outlook on things and how his photographs can help the rest of us Earthlings. Stellar Conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for clicking or tuning, but definitely thanks for listening. How about this for a dinner conversation starter? The first time I left Earth. Now, being an astronaut takes years of training, dedication, grit, smarts. It also gives you cool points for a lifetime or two. In this segment, I talk with a former resident of the International Space Station and NASA veteran astronaut, Terry Virts. In addition to the science and the experience of space flight, Mr. Virts hauled a raft of cameras with him into orbit. His new book, View from Above, An Astronaut Photographs the World from National Geographic, is a page-turner with images you can almost fall into. Here's our chat.
Terry Virts works, so you could say Commander if you want, or just Terry is good.
Terry, thanks a lot for your time this morning. Look, they didn't get me a book until last evening, and I have to say it's breathtaking. The photographs,
wow.
You can absolutely fall into any page. You can open at any page and you fall into it. Is that how it felt when you first went up into the International Space Station?
You know, the first view, I can still remember the first view I had of Earth. It was just this breathtaking sunrise. It was this blue line. And I remember thinking, I have never seen that shade of blue before. It really surprised me to have that thought. And I've spent over 7 months in space, and it was, I mean, I never had a boring view. There's so many different things. It never got old how amazing the views were from space.
So that's one of the questions I was going to follow up with, which, because I wondered, like, as you're tumbling around the Earth, it reminded me of right. That silly vacation movie. He's in the traffic circle and he cannot get left. You know, here, Big
Look,
Ben.
It's Big Ben.
Big Ben Parliament, exactly.
Look, it's Big Ben.
Never felt like that for you, did it?
For me, it never did. There are astronauts who are more interested in the science than the art photography stuff. I think some folks have that sense. I love sunrises and sunsets and moonrises and moonsets. And on day 195 of my 200-day mission, my most recent flight, I was there with Samantha, an Italian lady, and she saw me taking pictures. And she's like, Terry, haven't you taken enough sunrise pictures? And I said, no, I haven't gotten the perfect one. The perfect one is out there. I still need to get one more. So that was the way I handled it.
Amazing. Let's talk about your camera. What kind of equipment were you using to shoot these pictures?
That was one of the best things of spaceflight. As a photographer like me, we had everything. So the normal pictures in this book were mostly shot with an Nikon D4 professional camera. I also had a Canon professional camera that I used to shoot the IMAX film Beautiful Planet. We had Hollywood quality. I was talking to James Cameron, and he said, oh, I use that for Avatar, a red camera, and also a Canon C500. They're Hollywood 4K cameras. I took a GoPro outside on my spacewalk. We had a little Ghost, which is similar to a GoPro that I used inside all the time. It was like the photographer's dream. Every type of camera, every lens imaginable, available within a few feet of you. And back on Earth, I've got my iPhone. And so it's like it was a big switch going from all this stuff. Although, I got to be honest, iPhones are amazing. And I do have some great Canon gear that I used to carry around. But it was hard to leave this professional photographer's dream. It was pretty awesome.
Right. I heard you mention Canon glass in there. You also mentioned Nikon glass in there too, right? So you really got around and got to try different productions.
Even had a Sony and a Panasonic, like a 3D camcorder. It was literally a little bit of everything. But Nikon and Canon, I use them both extensively.
Again, the photographs are truly amazing, and I want to get right back that into in just a second. But one of the things I was thinking about last night when I was looking at the book online, and that was, my wife will not watch two things with me. She will not watch playoff baseball with me, and she will not watch space movies with me because I freak out and get so into them. It seems like a cross between boredom and then all of a sudden drama and emergency. Is that something like that?
It's, you know, like being an airline pilot. It's hours of boredom punctuated by a few minutes of sheer terror. Although I was never bored even 1 minute in space, so the boredom part doesn't apply. But occasionally you have emergencies, and usually they're false alarms, hopefully, but you're in a situation where you have to respect it. You can't just ignore the glaring klaxon going off and go, oh, that's nothing. You have to actually respect every time the alarm goes off. And there's a whole chapter I devoted in the book to that, talking about some of the emergencies that we had in space.
Sometimes it takes a life-changing event here on Earth to change one's perspective or worldview.
Right.
Literally, you had a worldview. And literally, you were from a perspective that other people have probably never had. Many other people and most people will never get.
Right.
Did that have an impact on you that you brought back with you? And maybe has it progressed every time you've gone back up?
So it didn't change my view, but hopefully it gave me a bigger perspective. One of the things I do speaking kind of is one of my new professions, and I talk about how there's this universe and there's this bigger perspective, and the problems that we have on Earth, you know, are probably not that big in the scheme of, you know, this huge cosmos and billions of years and all this stuff. So it just kind of puts things back in perspective. There was another perspective I had, though, that was really interesting about humans and life on Earth. And during the daytime, you really can't see human activity. If you're looking at San Francisco, you can see it. And you can see the Bay Bridge, actually, the little thin line. But unless you're looking at it, you won't notice it. At nighttime, the city lights really show up. And on my first space flight, after about 4 or 5 nights of looking at the Earth, it hit me that I wasn't looking at population at nighttime, these yellow city lights. Mm-hmm. I was looking at global wealth. And I started to kind of pay attention to that and with an eye. And there's places like America, lots of people, lots of lights. Western Europe, lots of lights. East Asia, lots of lights in China and all part of Korea. Right. But there's other places like Africa where the Nile is very well lit up. And Johannesburg, way down on the other side of the continent, is really a big, bright city. And in between those places, there are 1 billion people. And there are literally, there's a few dots and that's it. It just struck me that at nighttime from space, you can kind of see how people on Earth are living. And it was kind of profound. The Koreas are the most striking example. I mean, South Korea is this beautiful, bright, shining beacon. Seoul is amazing. And then the North Korea is a black hole of blackness with a little white dot where Pyongyang is. And it really shows, you can see how people live in a good way and a bad way from space at nighttime.
Wow, that is a graphic representation of income inequality in some ways, too, and as far as an uneven distribution of opportunity. One last question for you before I know our window is closing. Buzz Aldrin wrote the foreword and introduction for your book, and Dr. Aldrin has been on with us on this show a couple years ago when his last book came out. Mm-hmm. Great picture of you and Buzz hanging out next to a plane, I think, or a large piece
F-16.
Of equipment.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, F-16.
So I imagine you guys standing back to back in a mess hall, taking on the rest of the room. Is that too fictional?
That's fun. Well, you know what happened about 15 years ago? There was some guy that was nagging Buzz. You didn't land on the moon. Put your hand on a Bible and swear you didn't land on the moon. He just hauled off. He took the guy down. It was a great right hook punch. So
yeah.
Buzz, you don't want to mess with Buzz.
No,
I tell you, he's 87. I can't keep up with him. He has more energy. I literally cannot keep up with him. He travels way more than me. He's on the go. He is and he's passionate about spaceflight. He's trying to promote humans going to Mars. And it's really cool to see somebody who was given like the biggest gift and opportunity in human history to fly with Neil and Armstrong and Mike Collins to the moon. And he's still working hard to promote it. It's really a great example.
Terry, my last question is basically about the next generation coming up behind you. Again, these photographs, my daughter was looking over my shoulder. She's 8 years old at the screen, and just every one of them she wanted to know more and more about. Do you see that this book is possibly an entryway for the next generation to get into science and technology?
Oh, I hope so. My very first book signing, it was just a couple nights ago, my first customer was this little 6-year-old girl. She had a shirt on that said, I want to be an astrophysicist. And she and her dad were in line like an hour and a half before I showed up. And that was my first customer, was a little first grade girl. And it was awesome. And I think, you know, people, a lot of times you get into this, you know, woe is us, the younger generation. I wish it was the old days, whatever. I'll tell you that there are some amazing kids and the opportunities they have to follow space missions on Twitter and learn about things through the internet. I mean, you can learn so much more, and a lot of kids actually get a chance to take advantage of that. And I think they're going to be a lot better than I ever was because they're going to have so many more opportunities. The key is to get all the kids those opportunities. And so, you know, no matter where you live, inner city or in the country or wherever, that they can get the education that some kids can get.
Well, broadband is infrastructure on this show, at least. So I totally agree with you.
Oh, it is entirely.
Terry Virts, thank you so much for your time this morning. Very valuable stuff. I can't wait for us to talk again.
I can't wait to get back out to the Bay and have an In-N-Out burger and watch some baseball games there.
Right on. Come on in. We'll come into the studio, okay?
Let's do it.
Okay, thanks, Terry. That was Terry Virts, a NASA astronaut who has spent more than 200 days in space and taken more photographs of Earth from above than anyone else. His new book of photos and prose is titled View from Above, An Astronaut Photographs the World. For links to his book and his bio, check out KGORadio.com/Techonomics. Just look for the story that goes with this week's show. And that's the capper for this week's broadcast. Our podcasts are littered all over the interwebs, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, and soon on Google Play. Just search the word Techonomics. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, my name is Jason Middleton. Thanks for listening to Techonomics. Reach out anytime and have great weeks, everybody.